their career. But we heard four tracks. Yes, we heard Apple Blossom Time, and we heard a different mix of that from the Wild Wild Love compilation released in 2017. But the song Apple Blossom Time originally comes from the 1991 release Go Go Harlem Baby. And this is a great album because it was produced by, it's Jim Dickinson. Mm-hmm. And basically the band kind of wanted to not necessarily clean up their sound, but to have a more produced sound. And they didn't overdo it on this one. And there's a lot of great songs on here. We heard two.
No, absolutely. And here's the thing. Like, you know, a lot of people would say that Dexter could wail, but in terms of like pure vocal ability, I think people who listen to those early Flat Duo Jets records may not realize what a capable vocalist he was on that song.
Yes,
he was fantastic. Really great stuff. And you did mention Go Go Harlem Baby. We did hear a track proper from that, from the Jim Dickinson produced record. That was a song called Harlem Nocturne, which is just fantastic. It's in a standard, actually, that they do their own version of.
Yeah, originally a jazz standard, and they reworked it, and we're also hearing it in the background currently. Before that, we heard an outtake version of the song Wild Wild Love that originally came from their 1990 debut, recorded in a garage somewhere in the U.S., and that's an outtake version which you can find on the Wild Wild Love compilation. This is a song that actually did quite a lot for them because they performed it on the David Letterman show in the 90s. And it kind of got them a little more notoriety. And then we started off with their version of Riot in Cell Block Number 9 from 1985's In Stereo. What a great version of that song. They would often mix covers with originals, especially in the early days, but it's something that was constant throughout Dexter's career. He loved just playing these songs. And we should also mention maybe just a little bit more about the influence, in addition to bands like the White Stripes and Jack White. Very influential on bands like X, at the time, and Nico Case eventually, and also Cat Power, have also spoken about the big influence of Dex Romweber and Flat Duo Jets and his music, and we just wanted to highlight a little bit of it in that set.
Exactly. So, you know, there's a tribute to one great fallen artist, and we're going to be paying tribute to another one coming up next, where we highlight the music of Damo Suzuki in the band Can. We've talked about Can before numerous times. And, you know, when we've been doing these anniversary look backs.
We just did one.
We just did one last year on Future Days by Can, which was the final record that Damo Suzuki was featured on with the iconic German group. And with that said, it's such a sad thing to see his passing. There is a fantastic documentary and also a book about Damo Suzuki. The documentary is called Energy, and I forget the title of the book. I think it is just I Am Damo Suzuki.
Named after the Fall song, who were also very influenced. But we should mention the influence of Can is so wide-ranging. Everything from, like, punk to, I don't know, like, it's
punk,
very wide-ranging.
Space rock, progressive rock. Even when you get into bands like Radiohead and this new iteration with Tom York and Johnny Greenwood with The Smile, who we will be playing a little bit later on in this program, undoubtedly influenced by this group. You know, I think a number of different bands from Pavement, who we heard earlier, to Joy Division, can all in some way, form, or another pay tribute and say that they've been influenced by this group. And Damo Suzuki was really interesting as a performer. I do want to admit, I've had a little bit of misinformation fed to me because there was a lot of urban legends surrounding how Damo Suzuki entered into the band.
Mm-hmm.
What actually happened, despite numerous stories, was this. The band were eating at a restaurant and saw Damo Suzuki busking. He performed for them and they were just so enthralled by his performance. They asked him to audition. Immediately, they just connected with him, and he performed for the group thereafter. And they recorded a few tracks together for soundtracks and some session work.
Mm-hmm.
And then, not too long after, in 71, they released Tag-O-Mago, their first full-length record with Damo Suzuki, who, of course, with this sort of singing-talking style, was very emblematic of where post-punk would go, with a range of artists from Bauhaus to The Fall taking influence from it. But he also had this very elliptical, poetic style of singing, where he would say certain phrases, repeating like a mantra, and then he would contrast these seemingly disparate ideas. And on the surface level, it made no sense whatsoever. It was very psychedelic, very out there, if you will.
Definitely out there.
But then at the same time, there was a type of logic to it, kind of forcing people to find these similarities between these disparate ideas, these lyrical motifs that he would come up with. And there was a lot of humor in his lyrics as well. Not to say that he didn't also have some darker subject matter, a matter that he dealt with. And we're going to be focusing on a range of his songs, including some that are pretty well known, some a little bit more obscure. There is a great story, though, that really, I think, heralds where the band was going with one particular song, and that's Spoon.
Yeah, that actually, they had that song recorded and released as a single. Was it for a soundtrack? I can't remember.
It was for a soundtrack.
But it charted, and they made a lot of money on it.
It became the opening theme for a particular TV serial
in Germany.
And it really made Cannes, maybe not a household name, but very popular, and they did manage to chart. You know, amazing for this group who made this progressive rock, proto-post-punk noise. But yeah, more than just noisemakers, they were adept musicians. And we're going to hear that on the opening song, one of my favorite opening tracks of all time, from Tagomago from 1971, the debut record that Daimyo Suzuki was featured on with Can. We're going to hear the song Paper House before we get into some of his other contributions with the band from the subsequent albums he's featured on, Eggy Balmyasi and Future Days, respectively.
All right, so let's get to it, and we'll talk a little bit more about Daimyo Suzuki and his music and his involvement with Can and not with Can afterwards. Let's get started. Paper House from Tagomago here on Revolution Rock.
Sometimes in my life,
Moonshake by Can, ending off this tribute to Damo Suzuki, the iconic singer from that German krautrock group who passed away at the age of 74 on February 9th. I do want to mention the fact that Damo Suzuki unfortunately passed away from a diagnosis of cancer, but he has been fighting against it for decades. He was originally diagnosed at the age of 33, where he fought against it. It went into remission, and it only came back in 2014. That's an incredible story, and just shows the tenacity of Damo and his lust for life and his willingness to just persevere through so much. A lot of this is actually covered in a fantastic documentary titled Energy, which I do encourage people to check out, where it details not only his struggle with the disease, but also his artistic practice and his philosophy in life, which is just awe-inspiring. Before we get into the music from Can itself, I think maybe it would be appropriate just to talk a little bit more about Damo and his broad-ranging influence.
Yeah, so, like, he was involved with Can, but only for not too many years. Basically, he's on three records, and then I believe some compilations. But anyways, from 71 to 73, there's three records featuring Damo Suzuki on vocals, and lead vocals. And other instrumentation as well, I believe.
Yeah, he did play whistle, flute, and some percussion as well.
But after he left the group, he left music for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. And I believe he became a Jehovah's Witness.
He did, back in, I believe, 1985. So even for a long period of time, he just wanted to abstain from it for other practices, for his art, for his own mental health, and for his physical health due to the cancer diagnosis, which he, as far as I'm aware, did not disclose to the group until years later.
Yeah, and he was involved without music. He didn't make music for quite a long time. But then he left. He left the... he was no longer a Jehovah's Witness, I don't believe.
No, I mean, he's still...
Like, he still was, associated with them, but... The church,
well, he was still a believer, but he denounced belonging to a church at that point, and then he made a miraculous return to music.
Yeah.
In the late 90s, I believe it was.
And he started creating a lot of music as a solo artist, with different artists, with different groups, most notably with Damo Suzuki's network. And a lot of these songs, like Can Live, were very long jams. And some very, very interesting ones were created, including one you were referencing during the break. But the songs, we were going to play a track from them, but I think the shortest song is 14 minutes. So
yeah, it's quite excessive in that way, and we only have so much time. With that said, though, this album that we played from, we just ended off with, Future Days, features a number of long, almost ambient-sounding songs. And this was probably the shortest and most, I guess you could say, traditional pop or rock and roll song on it. That track was Moonshake. We also heard two tracks from Iggy Bamiyasi from 1972. We heard Spoon, which was a song that actually heralded a hit for the group and was a TV show theme song, which is why it became so popular. And a fan favorite and one of the most associated songs with the group, Vitamin C, used in endless soundtracks and covered by numerous groups. And we started things off with Tago Mago's Paper House. Tago Mago, one of my favorite records of all time, and my first introduction to Can as well.
We wanted to mention, before we get back to what we're going to hear next, we wanted to mention the album we were referencing, the Damo Suzuki album, is from 2017. And I believe it was Soft Cell. Was that the...
Start Soft.
Sorry, actually. Start Soft. Sorry.
Yeah, a fantastic record, and one that I would highly recommend. Damo Suzuki actually just had so much great music in his discography, both with Can and beyond. And one thing I do want to reference as well is that there was a privilege of a lot of people over in Michigan to see Damo Suzuki perform live. That actually was something that I regret that I was not able to see. It's unfortunate, but with that said, I was still quite a good privilege to know that he was going about and touring, and I know during his last few years, his project would actually allow people to improvise and go on stage with him, which is pretty cool. I'm actually glad to hear that. Now, beyond the usual influences that we've mentioned earlier, from the likes of Pavement, Joy Division, and The Fall, that have all, like, name-checked Can and Damo Suzuki, there's some contemporary groups as well, amongst them two who we're going to be hearing next. Featuring brand new music from both of these musicians, we're going to hear a new single from John McHale, who actually has an album coming out pretty soon. It's sharing the title of this song, which we're going to hear, called Hex. And before that, we're actually going to hear brand new music from The Smile. Relatively brand new music. This album has been out for a few weeks now, but we've been so inculcated with theme month, we actually haven't had a chance to play anything from it yet. A brand new release called Wall of Eyes.
Yeah, from The Smile, featuring Tom York and Johnny Greenwood from Radiohead, and also
Tom Skinner as well, the great drummer from Sons of Kemet. And, you know, Radiohead undoubtedly greatly influenced by Can, and I think The Smile are equally so, as we're going to hear. So we're going to get into this with the track Read the Room from The Smile here on Revolution Rock.